might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, and we're back with the Metal Tales series, because of course the boys just picked back up after a long break, and started off strong with their massive show at Slane Castle, and on the phone via Skype over in England. You're in England, right?
I am, yes, still in England, back home from
yesterday. Okay, we've got, for the third time, joining us on Metal Tales is Tom Dean. What's up, dude?
I'm very good, Ethan. Thanks. How are you?
I'm great, man. We chatted a little bit before we started recording here, but one thing we're not going to do on this episode is have Tom do his intro all over again and his history of being a Metallica fan, all that stuff. If you want, the last one we did together, you can listen to is Metal Tales in Barcelona, and he was on with Clint at one point. So Tom's probably sick of telling his story.
As much fun as it is to tell it, yeah, I think people are probably bored of it by now.
Right, that's all good. Well, let's jump right into it then, man. Would this be like number 7 for you on the Worldwide Tour?
I think 6 or 7. Did a couple in London and Glasgow on the Arena Tour, then Charlotte, and then Barcelona. So yeah, I feel like it probably makes it like 6.
Okay.
on the Worldwide cycle.
That's amazing, man. And then remind everybody how many shows total this is, a lifetime?
I think this was number 15.
15, okay.
Yeah, so I really stepped it up in the last few years.
Yeah, man, that's great. I wish I was able to get over there for more of these, any of these European shows, really. But yeah, I saw a few people, you know, posting about it on Facebook and Instagram, the Slane Castle show. You know, some guys, you know, Aaron Ginther was like his 96th show or something. It's
wow.
Just madness. Some of these people that we know and love are going to so many shows, man. I'm very envious.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy in the queue to board the plane on Saturday, and he was closing in on 50.
Wow.
Yeah, he had some good stories to tell.
That's crazy. Did you go by yourself or go with a friend? Or
I took a friend of mine this time, a guy I lived with at university, who kind of, I don't think, if it hadn't been for knowing me for 15 years, I don't think he'd be a Metallica fan. But
right.
He's kind of been absorbed into the family, and he came with me to Sonosphere Festival back in 2014 for the By Request tour.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And when I offered him up the chance of a weekend in Dublin with the caveat of going to a Metallica gig, he jumped at the opportunity, luckily.
Oh, that's amazing, man. Had you been to Slane Castle before, or was this all first for you?
This was a first for me. I kind of, when the tour was first announced and kind of we just knew cities, I knew that Dublin would be a good possibility because it's so close. It's only an hour from London,
right,
by plane. And I assumed that they would play one of kind of the bigger stadiums in Dublin. They've got a big stadium called the Aviva. I think there's like some other kind of Irish sports stadiums that would hold a fair few people. But then when they said it was Slane, it was a name that I'd heard before from kind of big shows in the past. I know Guns N' Roses played there recently,
right,
the Foos. And I knew about someone like the bigger historic ones like Queen and U2.
Of course, yeah.
I had no idea kind of the significance. I didn't know that they only had like a maximum of one show a year there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's like I thought it was more than one, but I guess, yeah, it is just one show a year they do there.
Yeah, talking to people kind of, I'm talking to some of the Irish people over there, yeah, it's kind of one show a year, which made kind of some of the logistics a little bit more dicey because I don't think they're getting the habit of doing these shows, but I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk about. But I think it was actually run fantastically well for what was kind of a massive one-off show almost in the middle of nowhere in this tiny little village,
yeah,
in the countryside, sure, of Ireland, to then have suddenly 75,000 people and then all of the kind of Metallica crew, the other bands, and the stuff that goes along with that.
Yeah,
it was absolutely amazing that they can pull off such a great show.
Absolutely, man. I mean, even just the photos I saw that they posted through Instagram and Twitter and stuff, I mean, I'm sure even photos don't do the beauty of that place justice because it really looked amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of the scale. You've got kind of the scale of it, the fact that there's only, like I say, a small house. It's a giant kind of country house.
Right.
It's obviously on the estate. And then where they set the stage up is in a big natural bowl, and then the crowd, kind of as you've seen in the pictures, go backwards up the hill.
Okay.
Because you've got kind of you've got empty spaces on either side as well, which kind of exaggerate the scale. And then everything else is just trees and fields and a big river. I've seen some really cool kind of aerial shots of obviously when they were setting up the stage earlier in the day. And then some of the photos from during the show when you've got the whole crowd going backwards are spectacular.
Yeah, man. No, it looked beautiful. I mean, I even saw, I think Lars posted a couple of video clips of them, you know, because they had to take a helicopter in for it.
Yeah, you know. You saw those helicopters landing during some of the support bands. And I think earlier in the day, one of the guys who was in the support band was like, oh, there's Lars. He's arrived.
Yeah, only Lars by helicopter. Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't getting the hour bus from Dublin like the rest of us.
Right, exactly. So you didn't rent a car, then you took a bus out there?
Yeah, no, so it's set up for it. They kind of have a really good system in place. And so we flew over to Dublin on the Saturday morning, kind of threw our stuff in the hotel. Went out, had a few pints of Guinness, and then jumped on a coach from Dublin to Slane, to about an hour, and then they kind of also guarantees that they would get you back as well because it didn't finish till quite late.
Oh, okay.
And the bus was another hour and a bit, so probably by the time we got back to the pub in Dublin after the show, it was about 1:30 in the morning.
Oh wow, okay. So is this a specific bus that's taking just all fans there? So you're on the bus with a bunch of other people.
Yeah, it's just run for that day.
So oh
you
wow.
Kind of, you go along in the afternoon whenever you've booked your slot, they give you a wristband, you're on the bus there, and then back after the show, they just had like a really long queue system, and they just, a bus would arrive, they fill it up, send it off, another bus arrived, fill it up, send it off, like
wow.
Soldiers going off to war. It was a fantastic operation.
Yeah, totally.
To get everybody in and out. It's this tiny little village, there's only like three roads going in and out of it. When I say roads, I mean kind of small kind of country roads, one way and either way.
Totally,
so they had a big one-way system before it, to kind of get people in.
Wow, that's
great. A very, very good system afterwards.
Well, I mean, without really having to ask you, I guess we kind of already kind of jumped into the day. So I guess just kind of, let's keep walking us through kind of the whole day. Like, you know, obviously you got to Dublin, had some pints, get on the bus. Did you meet anybody else you knew out at the show, or was it just kind of you and your buddy kind of hanging out?
No, just me and my buddy. So I'd got his ticket using the Legacy pre-sale. And then I had to go and collect. When you've got the black ticket, you have to go and collect a paper ticket and your like Golden Circle wristband on the day.
Okay.
So we kind of had to separate when we got there. And I had to do almost a lap of the entire site. It took me about 10, 15 minutes to walk all the way around.
Oh, man.
To where I had to pick up my ticket. It was a good couple of K. And then, then we kind of met up inside. I think we got in there at about like 4:30, 5:00 and kind of found the beer tent, grabbed some beers. And then headed down to the stage just in time for the second to last support act. So Stiff Little Fingers, who I think they're an Irish band. I'd heard of them, but didn't know any of their stuff.
Yeah, I think so. They're kind of a lot of people credit them in the punk rock world as kind of being a pre-punk band.
I think I've heard them mentioned in like High Fidelity as like an inspiration of Green Day, I think.
Green Day was heavily influenced by Stiff Little Fingers. And the other openers, of course, were Ghost, Bokassa, and Fang Club. So you said you got there during Stiff Little Fingers?
Yeah, so we missed Fan Club and Bokassa.
Okay.
But I wanted to make sure that I got there in time for Ghost, because I absolutely love Ghost. And I really wanted my buddy Martin to get to see them, because I'd kind of talked them up, but he hadn't had time to listen to anything, or he didn't even know what they looked like. So it was great to see his impression of seeing Ghost for the first time.
That's cool. Did you? So what you did see of Stiff Little Fingers, did you enjoy it, or did they sound good?
Yeah, they sounded good. They seemed to be really up for it, and they had kind of like a decent amount of people for a band that kind of low on the bill.
Yeah.
There quite a few people in the crowd who obviously knew their stuff and were excited to see them. So it's not like people were paying attention. They weren't just kind of having a chat and having a beer during their set. They were into it.
That's good.
People seemed to know all the songs.
Yeah, that's good, man. And then, Ghost, what'd your friend think?
He thought they were really cool. So I think he was, as he just said afterwards when we were kind of chatting, he was like, I was just expecting a band, like a regular band. Not that. Because I think there's not many bands like Ghost at the moment.
Right,
and they're
totally
fantastic. I thought they were so much better than in Barcelona. You could tell a few weeks of kind of being on that tour and on that stage, they're just growing in confidence, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't looked at all their tour dates. I'm wondering if they're filling, you know, Metallica will take like a week off or two in between the legs of the tour. So I wonder if they're off doing their own shows in between all that.
I think they are doing some stuff, because I saw, I can never tell when it's been recorded, but there was a few videos that came out last week where they'd been over in Chicago, I think, and they did like some acoustic stuff. somewhere. So I know that they are doing extra stuff as well. So yeah, they are on top form.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. I'm slowly starting to get into them, mostly because of Clint. You know, he's become.
Oh, good. Yeah, no, I know he's a fan. He's doing a good job if he's getting you into it.
Oh yeah, he's a big fan. Yeah, it's interesting lately. You know, after getting back from tour, you know, I bought a bunch of vinyl on the tour, and I've been just kind of going through all that lately and listening to it. It's mostly like old school stuff. So I haven't, you know, devoted a lot of time into really sitting down listening to Ghosts, but that's definitely high up on the list of things to do while I'm home.
Yeah, I think they're going to be around for a while, so they're kind of just going to rise and rise in status. So hopefully there'll be plenty of opportunities to see them in the future. I know they're doing a US tour, I think, next summer or maybe at the end of this year.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah, if they're coming anywhere near you, then I'd highly recommend seeing them. I've seen one of their solo shows. And they are absolutely amazing. They did like 2.5 hours with a no support band. Just had an intermission halfway through because they've got quite a big back catalog.
Yeah, for sure.
So they can really kind of they can sustain it a 2.5 hour show.
You know, I like when bands do that when it's just like an evening with. And you know, there's the intermission thing, which you know is cool sometimes. It's just really enjoyable to me, especially if it's a band I really really love, like Alice in Chains, for instance. A couple of years ago, they played the Ryman Auditorium here in Nashville, and it was just them, nobody else. They played for maybe 2 hours and 15 minutes, no break. And it was great. Like, I was out of the show by like 10:15, and they were amazing. And, you know, if there would have been a cool opener, great, would have loved it. But, you know, it's like Metallica. I'm mainly going to see Metallica.
Exactly. And, you know, if you're going to get that length of set, yeah, you know they're going to play all of the kind of the greatest hits and the popular songs, but you also know you've got a really good chance of getting some of those deeper cuts,
right?
Which I think is kind of what if you're really into the band, that's usually what's going to kind of really make that show special is going to be the slightly less common songs that get performed.
Yeah, exactly. By the time Ghost was finishing, was this place filling up pretty good? Because I know they were expecting something like 80,000 people.
It was for Ghost. It was pretty much shoulder to shoulder in the Golden Circle, and kind of you looked over your shoulder, and all you could see was just a mass of people.
Yeah.
And then, kind of after Ghost, and as it was getting towards, there's probably about 45 minutes gap for them to change the stage over.
Yeah.
You could just see and you could just feel the place getting busier and busier and busier. And it's just I can't think of many shows or even festivals that I've been to where there have been that many people. It's definitely one of the biggest shows I've ever been to.
Yeah, totally. And remind me and everyone listening what the Golden Circle is in, because it's not the Snake Pit, right?
No. So Golden Circle is a kind of fenced off area in front of the stage, kind of in a U shape. It probably takes in the first 10 to 20% of the floor area.
Okay.
So yeah, if you've got the Golden Circle ticket, then you have to kind of make your way all the way down to the very front. And then there's security there who check your wristband, and they let you into that area.
Okay, very cool. And as a black ticket holder, that's what you have access to, right?
Yeah, you get that for every show that you go to.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's a nice perk of the black ticket is that you're not having to be way in the back, just basically watching the video screens at that point.
It is, yeah, because I do feel bad for that. If you haven't got that, even if you're on, so if you're on the front barrier of just the general admission, you are still quite a way back.
Yeah.
Whereas even from these two shows where I've worked out, like my spot now is kind of just in line with the front of the Snake Pit. Because after the first few songs, they spend a lot of time out there.
Right.
So you've got the bit at the end of the show where the drums come up and they're just out there. And yeah, you get a kind of really good view and a good chance to get kind of quite a lot of kind of really close interaction.
Yeah, that's cool. I know a couple of our other listeners and are obviously, you know, massive fans, like Aaron, for instance, who's been to 96 shows. I saw them posting. They're probably not far from where you were standing because they all have black tickets and stuff like that.
Yeah, because I haven't done it yet because I've always been with friends and so I haven't wanted to make them stand out all day. But if you've got the black ticket, you get let in at like a very similar time to the people with the experience tickets. Some people like short straw tickets and stuff like that. So there's a kind of a Facebook group for people with the black tickets, and you can see people getting in there really early and getting the rail.
Cool. That's awesome. Are you in said Facebook group?
I am. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. So
it's really cool because it's a good way to kind of one, you get to recognize people, but two, you kind of share travel advice and help. So there's probably people from every country in there that they're going to.
Oh yeah.
So it's really useful to have a bit of insider information for how to get to these places and what to do.
Yeah, that or just you know meetups before the shows, things like that. That's really cool. That you know we live in a time where you know we have this you know thing like Facebook where people can meet up and or help each other out. Like, hey, I'm looking for a ticket for this show. Can anybody help me? Whatever.
I think it'll be really useful when I go to like some of the shows on my own. Like, so far, I've always had someone to travel with and talk to. But yeah, but in the future, I've got a few shows coming up where it's just going to be me. So I'll definitely make the most of it then, to kind of hang out with people before the show and during the show.
Yeah, absolutely, man. No, that's great, dude. It's, you know, as we've seen, just as the podcast hosts, I mean, in the last 2.5 years of doing this, I mean, that Metallica community really, you know, care about each other, look out for each other. And, I mean, God, we haven't really encountered anybody that wasn't cool or very loving and stuff like that. I mean, we've made so many new friends just because of this band. It's insane.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great thing to have in common with people. And you can, if you find someone else who likes Metallica, then you've got a friend for life there.
Hey, man. And I might be seeing you in a couple months too in London. So.
I hope so. Yeah, in August, if you're over, that'd be awesome. As long as it's not while I'm in Germany seeing the boys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think it's, I'll have to get back to you on the exact dates, but I think it'll be late, very late August, like the last weekend or something. Yeah, I was gonna hit up a couple other people that we know through the podcast, and maybe one night, you know, pick a pub that we're staying near and just kind of let everyone know, like, hey, we'll be here. Come on down, hang out.
That'd be great fun. Now, I look forward to it. Now, if I'm in town, then I'll definitely be there.
Yeah, and then by the end of the night, my wife will be very Metallica'd out at that point.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of fatigue, and also probably slightly inflate your ego and sense of importance and famousness. You'll be like, wow, how famous are you in London?
Oh, phew. Well, we're going to find out, huh? Well, cool, man. So back to the show. So Ghost finishes, you said, about 45-minute set change.
Yeah.
And then let's just kind of walk through the set list. And there's some really cool moments in here, I think. Some of it's very similar to what they've been doing, but there's a couple nods to Ireland in the set list. So
There was, yeah.
Yeah, so
Ecstasy. They definitely planned it well.
Oh, yeah. So Ecstasy, obviously, is normal. That plays first. Gets your Hardwired intro into Hardwired. And, I mean, how explosive was the crowd when they came out on stage and kicked into Hardwired? Was it, could you feel a good energy in the I was about to say the room, but in the field.
In the field, yeah, even in a big open space, no, it was there was a great pop. And yeah, it kind of worked out well because it had been raining on and off all day, and then kind of that went away, kind of got a last little bit of light in the sky, and
right.
Yeah, and the boys came on, kind of, it just been, because it had been publicized that they'd be on at like 8:15, which you knew was never going to happen. So yeah, it was back, they kind of got to 8:30, 8:40, 8:45, and you kind of, people are getting that pent up energy and frustration that you want it to start.
Right.
So Hardwired's kind of the perfect song to puncture that.
Oh yeah, let it all the energy out there.
I'd love it as an album opener. I'd love it as a show opener.
It really is great live, man. It just, you know, you got that cool intro tape, and then all of a sudden it kicks into the bah, bah, da, da. You know, it's so good, man.
It just gives him a great chance to kind of get out there. It gives Lars a little opportunity to do his little moment at the beginning.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, straight into it.
Yeah, man, that's great. And then they've been doing this every once in a while on these European shows, and they kicked, you know, second song of the set into The Memory Remains.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea because I don't know what kind of percentage of people there have not heard Hardwired. You'd like to think it's pretty low, but if you've got people maybe who aren't on board with Hardwired and haven't got into the new album, then yeah, Memory Remains is a brilliant one to kind of bring them straight in. It's such a crowd pleaser. It's got the great sing-along bit.
Yeah, man, I was about to ask you about that. I mean, that outro and the whole crowd knows to sing now. I mean, did it just sound epic with that many people doing it?
Yeah, it was one of the louder ones that I've ever heard it. And then I'm still absolutely loving the kind of the extra outro that they've added after that, that kind of cuts in after let the crowd have a little bit of singing.
Right.
It's absolutely brilliant. I don't know if you've had a chance to hear it yet.
Yeah, I've seen it on YouTube. It's really cool. It's a nice little change.
It is, yeah. Before, the first time I was in Barcelona, and yeah, I really dig that. I'm looking forward to getting a download of that one.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I don't remember them doing that in Birmingham when they played the song, but I think they added it for the European show.
Yeah, I don't think they didn't do it any of the indoor shows that
right.
I saw.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was just specific to the outdoor shows.
That'd be cool. It'd be cool if it was kind of just kept as that, just for those ones. I don't mind that.
Right, exactly. Dude, you guys got Ride the Lightning. That's pretty awesome.
We did. Yeah, sorry about saying that. I got really excited because it was only afterwards that I actually realized that I was right. And don't often get the guitar things right because I'm not a guitar nerd. But James came on with like a really cool black Explorer.
Yeah.
That I hadn't seen. I don't think I've ever seen live before, and looked kind of really old school. So I was a little bit hopeful that maybe it'd be something super rare. But yeah. No, when they kicked into Ride, I'm loving it. Yeah, they played it in Barcelona as well.
Yeah.
They've got really cool visual effects on the screen. It's just kind of, I think you'd be hard pushed to find a more archetypal Metallica song. It's got that really distinctive intro riff. It's got quite a nice long chuggy intro, the cool solos at the beginning,
right,
cool solos throughout. Like Kirk absolutely nailed the solo. It's definitely pushing itself up my favorite solo list. And again, it's kind of it's ticking off another group. You've had Hardwired for people who are kind of maybe bang up to date, Memory for your people who maybe have not been into it for a while, and then Ride for your OGs.
Yeah, exactly, man. And then, gosh, jumping right in, this is our first little nod to Ireland here. They do Whiskey in a Jar, which, you know, for a long time, I just didn't know who did that song. And then it turns out it really isn't anybody's song. It's an old traditional Irish song.
Yeah. I think as you, different areas of the internet give James quite a lot of slack for his interpretation of some of the vocal lines.
Yeah.
But no, I absolutely love it. That was kind of one of the first songs that I got into, kind of with the MTV and Kerrang TV that right. we have over here. The video is really iconic and just seemed to always be on kind of throughout the time when I was about like 16, 17,
yeah,
18.
Man.
And I love the video. I love that the Flying V with the flames on that James plays. I think
yeah,
like James
totally.
Looks so cool in that video. That's kind of peak Hetfield, absolutely badass looking.
Yeah, that was a bit, I mean,
and obviously the Irish crowd was so into it.
Oh, I'll bet, man. I mean, it seems like kind of a no-brainer that they would play that song, you know, but they also, you know, didn't play Trapped Under Ice in Antarctica, but...
I was just about to say the same thing, yeah.
Smart move.
I was 50-50. Yeah, I was 50-50 as to whether they would play it. I didn't know kind of how much they would bend to popular pressure, but
right.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Absolutely, man. No, I love that song, and it was a pretty damn big single for him back in the 90s, and it's just cool to see basically two songs from the Load era right in the first four, you know, with Memory and Whiskey.
I love that kind of nod to that era of where they were just churning out so many awesome songs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. Then we move on to The Unforgiven, which is this obvious staple.
Yeah, it seems to be sticking around, and long may it continue. I didn't really talk to my friend very much during the show, but Kirk was kind of wandering up towards us just before heading into the solo, and I just turned around to him and I was like, just check this solo out. You're going to love this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kind of absolutely shredding it right in front of us.
So is he? Is your friend not a huge Metallica fan, or is he casual? What's his story?
No, he's very casual. So he obviously knows a lot of Metallica just because of being around me for 15 years.
Right.
But I think if he was kind of on his own in his car, I don't think he'd be choosing a Metallica album as the first thing to listen to.
But maybe a Ghost album now, who knows?
Maybe. I think, won't be surprised if he's hitting me up for some recommendations for them very soon.
Yeah, man, good band to get into for sure. It was interesting to hear about somebody taking a friend to a Metallica show and then they're a bit of a casual fan and don't know all the catalog, and just to kind of hear their reaction. Because I mean, I know there's a lot of people that I'm friends with that maybe got off the ride years and years ago, like maybe Black Album or something. And then all of a sudden they hear about the new record, they get it, they go to a show, and they're like, holy shit, I forgot how good this band is.
Yeah, they've just maintained such a high standard of live show for such a long time,
right?
And then they've got this ridiculously deep back catalogue that they can pull from, and still kind of have something for everyone. And I think they're doing a really good job with it on this European tour of the stadium side of kind of giving something. Because if you've got 75,000 people coming, they're not all going to be kind of diehard fans who are
right.
sitting there rooting through the B-sides and the garage inks and things like that.
Yeah.
So you've got to give people decent value for money, because they're forking out, I don't think any of the tickets there would have been less than 100 euros.
Right.
But at the same time, you've got to give a nod to the people who are kind of the diehards who have put you there and kind of been through thick and thin.
Absolutely.
And I think they've found that balance perfectly. And I think it also helps that you've got such an amazing stage show as well. So...
Yeah, I think if you even if you
song, there's something for there,
right? And even if you weren't, let's say the only song you knew was Enter Sandman, but your friend drags you to the show. Just the production alone is like, man, this is insane. You know, with all the pyro, how much more pyro they can do outside, the big M, the big A, how massive those screens are. I mean, it's just a spectacle to see.
I think that the pyro for this one just seemed a kind of a little notch above Barcelona.
Yeah, oh, nice.
I don't know, maybe the difference of being outdoor, completely outdoor, compared to a stadium,
mm-hmm.
where they could just crank it up a little bit, but everything just seemed a little bit bigger, which was amazing.
I would imagine just because of the location of Slane Castle, they were probably allowed to, you know, amp up the fireworks a little bit and the pyro, and make some explosions a little bigger and things like that.
Yeah, later on, with things like the one intro felt yeah, just a little bit bigger. And I suppose you're having none of the restrictions of the stadium.
Right.
No, you're not even got any kind of residential area. I'm assuming the people in the village kind of waive all of their rights to any kind of noise pollution that one night a year that the show is in.
Yeah. I mean,
just kind of get away with anything.
It's just crazy that they do one show a year. I mean, so even if you're not, like I said, a massive Metallica fan, maybe you're just going because it's this big event that happens once a year and you're like, well, I don't love this band, but it's not like there's shows here every weekend, so we got to go.
Yeah, I think there were some people, you kind of overheard conversations who just, yeah, maybe are just like Slain junkies who just go every year. I heard people on the way out talking about like when they've been to see Guns N' Roses and like when they've been to see Eminem. He must have played there in the past.
Yeah.
So I think maybe there are people who go to Glastonbury every year, regardless of who's playing.
Yeah, exactly.
There are people who just go to Slain.
Yeah.
To go to Slain.
Hey. That I'd probably do the same thing.
Just, not a bad habit to have.
Yeah, exactly. So, back in the set list from the Unforgiven, we go into Now That We're Dead. This has been on the set list since the start of the entire tour, man. It's crazy this one's lasted so long.
Yeah, I'm really pleased because when the Hardwired first came out, it was probably the first song that I really latched onto and really, really liked. I love that intro. Love the kind of the build-up with the drums. Mm-hmm. Love the chorus. And then I was a bit worried that kind of the drum circle stuff, which I wasn't amazed by, but I didn't hate, like some people wasn't really anti it.
Right.
I thought it was cool, but I worried that would kind of be the albatross around its neck that would kind of drag it out of the set. So I hadn't really seen it on many of these stadium tours yet. They definitely didn't play it in Barcelona. So I was really, really happy to have it. Beforehand, there was some great Papa Het dad joking. He was on really good form. He seemed just genuinely really happy. And he talked to the crowd a lot more. I don't know, maybe it's because he knew it was an entirely English-speaking crowd, but compared to Barcelona,
yeah,
he didn't talk to the crowd as much. So yeah, he had some great dad jokes straight off the bat and seemed really happy. And there was also a great kind of one of those unique moments in during this where the bandana that he has in his back pocket fell out.
Yeah.
And so a tech or a roadie kind of scurried across the stage and was trying to tuck it back into his back pocket, and it just cracked him up, and he was just laughing so much that he could, like, I think it was the start of the second verse, he couldn't even get it out because he was just laughing so much.
That's amazing. Well, it probably just seemed like such a Spinal Tap moment, like your handkerchief fell out of your pocket, and he's trying to tuck it right back in next to his butt.
Exactly. I said to my buddy next to me, I was like, imagine if that's your job. What do you do for a job? I have to, like, I'm on handkerchief duty today.
Yeah,
if it falls out, I have to go stick it back into James Hetfield's back pocket.
Yeah, I'm James Hetfield. Bandana tech. Which color would you like tonight, sir?
Exactly, from the bandana menu.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Moving on from there, we got Moth into Flame. I'm glad this one is stuck around. This is in my top five of Hardwired.
Yeah, it's one of the slower ones to grow on me. At first I found kind of like the chorus a bit clunky, but no, I love it. And the pyro, I think it'll stay in just for the pure pyro possibilities.
Right, the dancing flame.
That's the first time that you really got those, the big, I think it's probably the first bit of pyro during the show. And so you've got like the dancing flames across the middle, the giant ones on top of the stage. And then I did turn around at one point as well, and they had three big pylons in the middle of the crowd, and they
awesome.
Had big flames going off them as well.
Yeah, they're like these big white towers kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those things are cool. And man, that pyro is no joke. I mean, you could be 100 yards away from it and still feel it.
Oh, the burn that you could feel off of, especially when the ones at the top went off,
mm-hmm.
was really, really hot. I don't know how Lars does it, because he's like a few feet away from those dancing ones.
Yeah, totally.
He's got any eyebrows left.
I remember seeing a stadium show in Philadelphia and in Detroit, and we were in the very back by the soundboard. and when those things went off, I mean, even in the very back there, you could feel it.
Oh yeah, totally. You'd be able to feel that for probably. I bet the front row of the general admission, they could probably still feel it from there.
Oh, absolutely.
Probably a good 60, 70 meters away.
Absolutely, man. Excuse me, man. I am just hoarse today. So moving on, Sabbat True, obviously a great staple. Did Hetfield do his normal "You Want Heavy" thing here, or?
He did, yeah, and he kind of did an extended one. He did some great chatting before Moth as well, where he's like, this song is about 8 minutes. And then he kind of goes off into like talking your legs about addiction. He's like, oh, you can be addicted to whatever you want or anything.
Right.
And then, did a good little kind of intro to Sabbat True, which is just, and again, that kind of brings people back maybe. You've had two Hardwired songs in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got people who maybe aren't into that, then it just like, obviously brings them straight back. I guarantee you there weren't many out of 75,000 who don't know Sabotruk.
Yeah, they would be surprised.
Such an amazing live.
I'd be shocked if someone's out there like, I'm not really sure what song this is. But, you know, it's the Black Album. I mean, I'm pretty sure most people on this planet have owned that record at one point in their life.
Exactly. I'd be surprised even if my mum doesn't know some of Sabotruk. I think she could probably recognize that.
Right, exactly. that's always a good live one. Man, I'm really stoked on this. Because it was a Sandcastle show, and it's probably, it's like my number one or number two favorite song of Hardwire, but you guys got Halo on Fire.
It's my number one, definitely. Absolutely love it. We're lucky. We got it live in one of the, I think it was the first London show. And I'd like to kind of, he did like a different intro then, and it's got a different intro. It's got quite a long intro tape now.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a little while to suss it. I was like, is this going to be, because it's where sometimes they've done Fade to Black. And I was like, is this the Fade tape? I was like, no, it's a bit different. And I was really hopeful that it would be Halo. And it was, yeah. It's absolutely amazing. I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The outro is so cool. That's when you kind of tell that a lot of people did know the new stuff, because people definitely knew how to sing along to the last part of that.
Yeah, that's what people, me and Clint have talked about that, you know, in Europe especially, the crowds over there, they sing along with like guitar riffs and stuff. And especially a song like Halo on Fire that has that beautiful outro with the da, 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 da.
Yeah, when the drums kick in for the beginning of that.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite moment on the whole album.
Exactly. And you know, I mean, to me, Halo on Fire is a bit of a formula like a Sanitarium or a Fade to Black, where, you know, it's got its mellow parts, big choruses, and then like a big outro, you know, that just gets bigger and bigger and more massive as the song goes on.
Yeah, I think between Halo and Moth is probably the two songs that have got the most chance, maybe 5-10 years time, if we're lucky enough and they're still healthy and going, then mm-hmm. I think they're probably the two they've got the best chance of some longevity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of staying in the set list, because yeah, you can easily rotate Halo with Sanitarium and with Fade to Black.
Yeah,
and it's going to have that still kind of that gravitas and that strength.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I 100% agree with you on that one. So the doodles afterwards are pretty cool. The first thing I had to look up was the Wild Rover, and I kind of assumed it was going to be like a traditional Irish folk song, and sure enough, it is. And
it was, yeah.
I don't know if...
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's such a cool idea. I hadn't told my buddy about that either, and I don't think a lot of people in the crowd were kind of expecting it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's probably one of those songs which, even though I didn't know it, it felt like I knew it, but a lot of the crowd were into it. And they were singing along with the chorus.
That's cool.
So it's just something cool and different.
Yeah, was Robert singing it?
Yeah. Rob sang it. So I've heard him in excellent Spanish, and now with an excellent Irish accent as well. He's got a great range.
Yeah, and I don't know, the version I looked up was by somebody called the Dubliners. So I don't know if that's who actually wrote it.
I've heard of them. I bet it's been around longer than that.
It probably has, yeah. That was just the first one I looked up. I just wanted to make sure I knew somewhat what it was, because I'd never heard of the Wild Rover. But they also, you know, did a little tease of Man Unkind and Orion, which is cool.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I love it. Does the Man Unkind bit and then into Orion, and that's when they put up the video of Cliff in the background of the five screens. They have, like, Rob on one, a couple mm-hmm. blank, and then the outside ones with Cliff on. So no, I love that. It's just kind of such a cool moment. Kind of is really... Obviously, many of us unlucky enough to never got to see Cliff.
And right, yeah.
Great nods to someone who had such a big contribution to the band, and I don't think there's anything better than Orion.
So, if they're throwing up the images of Cliff when he's playing Orion, did he not do Anesthesia at this show?
No. They, in my experience, he's always done kind of one or the other.
Right.
It's
okay.
It's always the same day on the green footage.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's cool though.
I think on the. Yeah, in the arenas, it was always Anesthesia, and then on the stadiums, I've always seen that. Yeah, the bit of Man Unkind mm-hmm. into the bit from Orion.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I've never seen them do that, which now it kind of bums me out that I didn't get to see it, or they just did Anesthesia at those shows that I saw, but it's all good. I mean, I love the set either way, but cool that you got to see Rob play Orion.
Yeah, I'm really lucky. I saw them play the whole of Orion a couple of times now. And it was amazing.
Man, I wish they would do that. That would be so cool. Although nothing would...
If they just brought back like an instrumental slot.
Yeah, totally.
If they just did like one of the instrumentals, I'd be more than happy.
Absolutely, yeah. I would love that. You know, it just wouldn't surprise me though if, because we've seen these crazy set lists happening in Europe, that maybe they decide one day, hey, let's rehearse it and pull it out. But time will tell. But they probably won't. But I would love to see Orion at S&M 2.
I I think if you're writing the dream S&M 2, because we've already had Call of Cthulhu,
right? Yeah,
then you'd love that. I would. It's probably put Delivers to Die at the top of the list.
Yeah, that'd be a great one too.
Hear something. I think maybe Orion might be a bit better with the orchestra. Mm-hmm. But if I'm doing my instrumental 1-2-3, then Delivers to Die is definitely at the top.
Yeah, I'm Orion's at my top. And when we did our S&M 2, you know, hypothetical show, that when I created my S&M 2 set list, I had them opening with Orion. So I think just with that with an orchestra would just sound epic.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential there. I'd be very excited for that.
Oh yeah. And then I wasn't sure if they were going to keep the St. Anger slot in for Slane Castle, but they did, and they played Frantic.
They did, yeah. They got like a little St. Anger kind of video with the skull, a bit of the skull and a bit with the fist mm-hmm. on the screen. And obviously, I saw Frantic in Barcelona. I'd like to see St. Anger at some point in the tour, but I've got to say, at the time, I was thinking, I think Frantic is becoming one of my favorite live songs at the moment. It's just kicks so much ass now. Kind of with the additions of the better snare and Kirk solos, it's the song. You could always tell kind of the couple of days leading up to the show, kind of what song you find yourself like humming and singing as you're walking right. around the house. And I've had Frantic in my head for pretty much since the Barcelona show.
Yeah, man,
it's definitely going to be stuck there for another week. I absolutely love it.
That's awesome.
I'd happily have it every night.
Yeah, man. A lot of the songs have grown on me. I mean, it's still not my favorite Metallica record by a long shot.
I think if this now we've got this live version, I don't know if I'll ever listen to the album version again.
Right.
Because if I want to hear it, I'll just throw on one of these live versions.
Yeah, and I mean
everything that you need.
And those are mixed so well too. I mean, when I was on the Metallica Day of Service over here, when I was at the Salt Lake City Food Bank, one of the dudes put his iPhone on their stereo they had in there, and he put on the Salt Lake City show, and I was thinking, like, man, these things are mixed so well; they sound amazing.
Yeah, I bought a couple of the arena ones last year, and also for the, I think it's maybe it was just for fifth members, or if they just released it, they released like 10 or 11 tracks from the European tour.
And that's cool.
They're absolutely amazing.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of pyro again, so the intro to one you said you thought was a little bit more, added more pyro to it, or was longer or something?
It just felt bigger. And it was absolutely brilliant, too, like the lasers. They've got the flash bombs going off as well. And yeah, it just felt really, really big.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And that's such an epic intro for outdoor shows, man. I mean, if you're listening, if you've seen the arena ones and the stadium ones, there's a huge difference in how much pyro they use.
Yeah, it's just a whole nother level.
Yeah.
It needs to be in a stadium.
Absolutely, yeah, especially for the people that are, you know, got the cheap seats in the very back, you know, it's got to look great to everybody.
Yeah, I keep telling myself that the one of these shows I'll kind of hang back maybe by the soundboard, but I keep getting dragged further and further forward. But I might do it once just to kind of get a bit more perspective.
Yeah, I mean, man, if I had access to where you guys were every time, I'd probably end up doing that. But I did it differently at each show. I mean, like Nashville, I was kind of by the soundboard, but in Birmingham, we were on the rail. You know, just to get the two different perspectives.
I think maybe there's a couple of times in August where I've got like shows pretty much back to back.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll do it for one of those. But at the moment, when it's kind of a week or two in between each one, I'm back super excited and the novelty's there again. I just want to be as close as possible.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So then we get into what seems to kind of be somewhat of a staple, really from Frantic or the St. Anger slot on. It's kind of doesn't change a ton on these stadium shows. So then we go into Puppets, Bells, Creeping Death, and Seek and Destroy. Those haven't really changed, but at what point, I know we've talked about this before, and I can't remember off the top of my head, is it on Bells or Creeping Death where the second drum kit comes up?
It's Bells. So Puppets is with the normal setup.
Right.
And that's absolutely amazing. I'll never get bored of hearing that.
Of course not.
It's just, and again, it just drives everybody absolutely insane. So, and a great sing-along bit at the end as well. Then there's a really short turnaround that, again, I said to my mate, I was like, quick, look to your left. Because that's where the drums were kind of rising up on the hydraulics out of the stage there. And that little area at the lip of the snake pit where they all crowd around is tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another thing that makes that vantage point. If you can be in that golden circle and at the kind of the point of the snake pit where that is, it's probably a better view than if you're at the front row of on the barrier on either side of the stage.
Right, yeah.
Because they're kind of the shape of the stage blocks you and puts you a bit of a distance away from the drums. But yeah, so where we were, you didn't need the kind of the mic'd up drums. You could hear Lars actually hitting the drums.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome, man. Yeah. When we saw that, you know, I think they were only doing it on one song on the first stadium tour. It was just Seek and Destroy, and that was it. So it's cool that they're doing a couple different ones in that smaller setup.
Yeah, you get that awesome kind of Ride the Lightning combo. And Bell's probably in my top five Metallica songs of all time.
Yeah.
And so to get that and then straight into Creep, they showed the video screen kind of, they got these two kind of the cameras that are on the wires that go over the crowd.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And then kind of during the Die chant, they showed that on the screen and that looked amazing. It looks like a red, all the lights were all red. And then you've got like 75,000 people going up this hill, still screaming "Die!"
Oh man,
just in the air!
I'll bet, absolutely
amazing.
I'll bet from their perspective on stage, that had to have sounded so cool.
Yeah, and just the visual effects must have been out of this world.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, and it's a cool little video trick when there's a big crowd participation kind of moment, and then you actually show the crowd on the screens. It's like, not that everyone's not going to chant "Die," but it's like everyone's like, "Oh yeah, like that's us. Here we go. This is our part. This is our turn." You know.
Yeah, it kind of accelerates it and exaggerates it, and yeah, just kind of encourages people to do it more.
Right, exactly. So closing out like usual, closing out the main set with Seek and Destroy up front on the little small stage area. This one has the other sing along part, the da 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 da, which is cool. I love that.
Got that great pop. Yeah, everyone knows the words. It's nice and easy. It's a crowd pleaser. Kind of James does a cool little intro, kind of widen up the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And again, kind of obviously getting quite late on in the set, you can understand if the energy was dipping a bit, but they just all seem to be still firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And absolutely loving it. And really energetic. They were always like coming to the right to the edge of the stage and obviously getting a lot of energy from the crowd.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's gotta be fun, you know, just for them as you know, the four of them kind of huddled together close during that. I know they've done that in the past, you know, like on the Cunning Stunts, you know, video and stuff like that, but it's just got to be fun to all, you know, you're so spread out on that main stage that when you come down together, yes, it's got to feel cool.
Because there were times like during the show where I would like lose one of them. I'd be like, where is Kirk? And you'd look around and like James is on one extreme side of the stage and Kirk's on the other. And you've probably got like 70, 80 meters between them.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Later on, they are just right on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
kind of like spinning each other's faces.
Yeah, I think it's so cool, man. So did you get spit out the bone in Barcelona?
No, we had Lords of Summer in Barcelona.
That's right. You did have Lords of Summer. So were you stoked to hear Spit Out the Bone?
Yeah. So I was lucky enough to hear the live debut of it in London.
Oh, well, you did. Awesome.
But I thought, like, on a stadium setting, again, it was just taken to another level. And it seemed that a lot more people knew that compared with Lords of Summer.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas Lords of Summer had that slight lull effect at the beginning of the encore when they came back out, people seemed right on top of this and really, really up for it. I thought it was absolutely awesome.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I mean, it's cool that the last track on a Metallica record of their record that's almost 3 years old can be that popular in that short a time. You know, it just speaks to the power of that record and those songs.
Yeah, it was cool. It built up a cult following early on, and then there was always that, when are they going to play it live? When are they going to play it live? And
mm-hmm.
it took quite a while into the arena tour before they brought it out.
Right.
And then it kind of went away a bit. And then obviously when they brought Lords of Summer in with the start of the European Stadium Tour, people maybe thought, oh, maybe that's gone, and they're just going to rotate that. And I think they played Battery in a couple of places at the end of the first leg. And so, no, but to come straight back out with that, it was fantastic.
That's cool. That's exciting. Nothing Else Matters sound pretty cool in that big of a place with people singing along?
Yeah. That's such a beautiful song. And yeah, in a setting like that, it's a nice change of pace as well. Because besides Halo, it was, and a little bits of Unforgiven, there's no ballads, no kind of let up
throughout
the entire set. So this is your first real breather moment. Since quite early on.
Yeah, it's a pretty brutal and high energy set list, man. I think you guys got a good one for sure.
That's awesome.
And then, you know,
I love it.
What's that?
I love it. To say Nothing Else Matters is always, there are people who complain about it, but
dude,
my motto is any day watching Metallica is better than a day not watching Metallica.
Exactly.
I'll happily sit through Nothing Else Matters every day of the week.
I know. I love the song. I don't really get sick of that song, or I never feel the need to complain that they've played it. You know, I mean, gosh, I could go to a show and they could play nothing but deep cuts and I'd be stoked, you know?
You'll be happy either way, but you know you're going to get it. You expect it, and yeah, for with a big crowd, it's perfect.
Right, exactly. So if anyone that was there was casual Metallica fan, they finally get their moment to hear Enter Sandman at the very end.
Yeah, I do like how genuinely surprised some people still are. They're
yeah.
Like, oh, great! They played it.
Oh my gosh!
I was worried they weren't going to play it.
I can't believe it.
Who'd have thought it? They saved it till the end, the biggest song. Yeah. But yeah, so that's great. Great fireworks. I'll be very interested to see when this one comes out, whether they edit it, because James completely fluffed the words at the start of the second verse.
Oh, did he really?
I don't know if he wasn't looking at the prompter or if he had, what had happened, but yeah, completely went. So he kind of had to fluff and mumble his way through that. Through that second verse.
Oh, but man.
Didn't put him off. Still nailed the rest.
Oh, yeah. Man, that kind of stuff happens on tours. You have like a little brain fart, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, wait a second. What was the next line?
Exactly. We'll forgive him that after 2 and a bit hours of exertion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Just like at all the stadium shows, I assume with the end of Sandman, there's like the massive like fireworks display going on.
There was, and the fireworks were another level. So you had like the end of Sandman, lots of fireworks. Then the fireworks keep going, and then they come out and they do their little speeches, and Lars gives his little talk about all the different places that they played.
Yeah.
And then the fireworks just kept going and going and going and going. Like, we walked from pretty much the front all the way back to the back of the venue, and we're just kind of getting to the exit. Fireworks still going. Walking around to the car park. Fireworks still going.
So, get back to Dublin. Fireworks still going.
Got the value for money. I can imagine, an hour and a bit later. So maybe that was just because they knew that people were going to queue for a long time for the buses to get back. So they
I think
give them something to look at.
I think they're actually still going right now. I think they tore down the stage, they took everything down, and just left the fireworks just to keep going off till next year.
Yeah, whoever gets to play next year left to turn them off the first thing they do. When they're
right, exactly. Did you just fly back this morning, I assume?
No, so I'm a teacher, so I had to fly back yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So Saturday night, we got back to Dublin at about 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Found a pub that was open till 3, had a few more drinks to kind of chat and talk about and decompress and come down from the adrenaline of the show.
Absolutely.
And then a wander around Dublin on Sunday, a few more pints of Guinness, and then jumped on the plane back.
There you go, man. Well, that's such a, obviously the setting that you saw the Metallica in is gorgeous, but I mean, Dublin in general, I love Ireland. I love Northern Ireland. I love hanging out in Dublin. You know, the last tour I did with Kings of Leon, the last European tour I was on with them, we had 5 days in Dublin, I think. We did 3 shows there.
Oh, nice.
And it's such
a good place to spend a bit of time.
Oh, man, it's such a cool city. I could walk around there all day, man. I remember we stayed right by this train stop, so I could just hop on there and go to like the Temple Bar area or whatever. And I've always had a great time anywhere in Ireland, especially Dublin. I got to spend a St. Patrick's Day in Dublin one time.
Oh, wow. That must be another level.
Oh, my God. I've never seen – that's like the heaviest partying I've ever seen in my life. Like, people were like dressed as leprechauns and like just passing out in the street. And like, and this is like 11 in the morning.
Wow. It's a really cool place to go. We kind of wandered around a few different places. Temple Bar was nice, obviously a bit touristy, but some of the others. And it is true, just Guinness tastes better in Dublin.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does.
Any pub in the world, it just tastes better in Dublin.
Yep, absolutely right, man. Well, Tom, thanks again for doing this, man. I love hearing, about this show in particular, and can't thank you enough for being a part of the show again.
No problem. No, absolutely loving. I've really enjoying the podcast recently as well. The Unload one was fantastic. That kept me going.
On my, nice.
Commute to work today and back.
That was a fun one to do.
I like the bringing a bit of science into it as well.
Yeah. Oh man. If you could have seen him here, he was when we got the dry erase board out to rank the songs.
I do need to check it out on YouTube because I listen on the underground, so I have to download it. Don't get any.
Oh right, yeah.
But it was one of the few times where I was like, oh damn, I've got to see what this looks like on YouTube.
Yeah, so it was pretty funny
checking that out.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Paul had texted me and Clint like a few days before. He's like, I'm coming in hot, guys. I'm bringing a whiteboard. And we're like, what is he? Why is he bringing a whiteboard? Just print out a piece of paper with it. And then when I saw his chart system, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
And as a teacher, I definitely approve of the use of the whiteboard.
Exactly. Well, cool, man. Well, I will keep you updated on when my London trip is coming up, and hopefully we can meet up.
Awesome. That'd be great.
All right, man. Well, thank you again.
No problem. Take care, Ethan.
Hey, it's Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we hope you're enjoying the Metal Tales from the Road series. If you've been keeping up with us, then you already know that we've covered every stop on the 2018-2019 North American Arena Tour, and we look forward to catching up with all of our European friends later this year on the Stadium Tour overseas. And there's more! After the Stadium Tour, we are continuing the Metal Tales series for any Metallica show in the past. Maybe you saw one of the Orion Festivals. Maybe you were at the Channel in 1984 and Cliff Burton bought you a beer. Maybe you were at one of the 30th anniversary shows, or you just saw a regular-ass show in North Dakota somewhere. We want to hear from you. Since Ethan and I started Metal Up Your Podcast, we've wanted to find a way for listeners to call in and share their stories. Well, this is it. To make yourself eligible for a future or past Metal Tales episode, please consider joining us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you not only get to come on the show as a guest, you also get both of our Cover Our World Blackened EPs, monthly giveaways like deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, posters, and other goodies. You get early access to our YouTube videos, and we also let you ask our guests like Ray Burton, Michael Wagner, Hailstorm, members of Slipknot, your very own questions. For what essentially amounts to 2 cups of coffee a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. For any of you on the ride with us, we love you, we thank you, peace and adios. Okay.